Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan, hoping that the local football team has a bright future. We know you will if you work with our buddies Kondori and Murad. It is time for you to plan your future. The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Kondori and Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Tell them G&D sent you to get a discount. kmlawyers.com. Let's learn about the Cardinals and dive in on Sunday's matchup. Dave Burns joins us now to get us up to speed on all things Arizona Cardinals as we get ready for Sunday's matchup. He's the co-host of Burns and Gambo on Arizona Sports each day in the afternoon. Dave, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate you. You're on in D.C. on G&D. How are you?
Grant, Danny, good to be on with you. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate your time as well. So my read before the season, Dave, was this Cardinals team was going to be better than people thought. They were going to be frisky and, you know, maybe win a few more games than people were anticipating. Through 3 weeks, I think I've kind of got that right. What was your read, and then what have you seen?
Exactly the same and exactly the same. I think our read was that they were going to be a little bit better. The question was in the margins. How much better is a little bit better? You know, what's the ceiling? How high can they go? Kind of what are they capable of doing? But so far, I got to tell you, now, you know, I would hope our fan base is getting to the point where they're a little evolved beyond, hey, good job and way to try hard and you kept it close and all that stuff. But there was, I think, a level of encouragement with how they played in the first half against Buffalo on the road, how they played in the second half against the Lions last week when they kind of buckled down, and how they dominated a Rams team that, granted, they were all, you know, beat to hell with all the injuries and everything, but they punked L.A., and they never do that to the Rams, and they certainly never do that to the Rams here. So I do think there is kind of a level of guarded, okay, they're better than we thought, and that kind of plays with what we were hoping for this offseason. Now let's see if there's a next step to that, and I think that's a big reason why this game this Sunday is such a big deal.
Dave, when the Commander staff turned on the film, what'd they see in the way of, on both sides of the ball, offense, defense, strengths, that they know this is where the Cardinals are going to provide problems?
It didn't show last week, but I think the strength will be in their running game, and I think the strength will be in their use of 12 personnel and 13 personnel, their ability to run the ball out of that, their ability to throw the ball out of that. Now, that's going to take a little bit of a hit because of Trey McBride being ruled out for this game, but I think they're going to see an offense that is really quite dynamic. Now, again, it didn't show last week against the Lions. The Lions have one of the better defenses in the NFL. But with Kyler Murray, this is not your Cliff Kingsbury Kyler Murray. He's under center. He's running boots. He's, you know, making his progressions. He really has, maybe not all the way, but he's evolved and advanced as a defense. What you're going to see is a really suspect secondary. You're going to see no real obvious pass rush, but it is improved from last year. There's no, like, one guy outside of maybe Dennis Gardeck who makes you say, ooh, that's the guy right there. But there have been a lot of negative plays. There, Buda Baker, you know, after having what I think was a subpar year last year, I think he's been a terror so far this year. He's played like a guy with his hair on fire. So you see a defense that is, I would say, very average, which honestly, given preseason prognostications, is a little bit of a victory for the Cardinals. I think average is about the best case scenario you could have hoped for if you're a Cardinals fan.
Dave Burns with us here on Grant and Danny, breaking down the Arizona Cardinals. Dave, you mentioned no Trey McBride. What does that do to the offense?
Well, so I mentioned 12 and 13 personnel, right, which is, you know, two tight ends or three tight ends. What made Trey McBride so great is that he's one of the best pass-catching tight ends in the NFL, or at least he's emerging into that role, and his ability to be a pass catcher when you're putting a formation out there that just screams we're going to run the ball and then you throw it. Trey McBride is a great weapon to have in that, especially when Marvin Harrison Jr. is out there too and commanding so much attention. Jonathan Gannon said today he 1,000% believes in the room without Trey McBride. That's going to put a lot of emphasis on Elijah Higgins to kind of step up into that role. I think this week, and I know the Commander's defense obviously not off to a great start, I think this week is going to be a real good test for the Cardinals' willingness to kind of stick to their identity, even though McBride, one of the key parts of that identity, is not available. I want to see if they stick to it, even though they're down him, because he's just such an important part of that.
Dave, it seems to me like Kyler Murray was marvelous against the Rams and then has been really average or a little less than that in the other two games. A, is that correct? And just kind of give us a state of the union on Murray in the passing game.
I'll give you, against the Lions, I think he was pretty average. I thought he was better against the Bills than he got credit for, than maybe the numbers would show for it. I think he was victim of a few things out there that weren't exactly going his way that, you know, ultimately he's got to rise above. He's the quarterback. The Lions game was a step back. There's no doubt. It was a very meh game for him. And I think in large part because the Lions did such a great job taking away the run for the Cardinals. And without that, I mean, it's, you know, Batman without the suit. I mean, there's just not a whole lot there if the Cardinals aren't able to run the ball. And I think Kyler's not there yet in this offense if they're not able to run the ball. I'll tell you, it's everything in the offseason has been A-plus for Kyler Murray, but we're not in the offseason anymore. We're in the regular season. I think the fan base has been impressed by his willingness to work, his willingness to be the quote-unquote, you know, first guy in, last guy out kind of guy, and his willingness to embrace everything that this new offense has brought. But at the end of the day, it's got to be results, and so far the results have been mixed. He certainly had his moments, but not enough of them. Let's put it this way. If there were a few more Kyler Murray moments in these first three games, they're easily 2-1 and not 1-2. I just think there haven't been enough of those.
It seems from watching the games, he's not running a whole lot. He prefers, and I like this, but to kind of live in the pocket at this point or throw in the football wherever it is, even if they move him around out of the pocket. How much of a factor are his feet at this point?
It's still a factor. I think he's finally, I don't want to say learned, but I think he's finally, I guess, learned to come to understand the value of hanging around and staying in the pocket and making his progressions and not taking off and running. It is still, I mean, look, it's still a valuable weapon. James Conner is kind of the thunder, and they don't really have a lightning kind of running back to kind of counter that physicality that Conner brings. So I still think that's Kyler Murray in spurts, but there's no doubt he's far more focused on keeping his eyes down the field, looking for a receiver to get open, doing his progressions, all that stuff. Drew Petzing, the offensive coordinator, has done, I think, a really nice job of designing plays to roll Kyler out a little bit more, get him out of the pocket, get him a little bit better view downfield, because that's obviously going to be a challenge for a shorter quarterback. He'll still take off, and there will guaranteed be 3, 4, maybe even 5 moments where things break down and he takes off, and everybody will be wowed by just how fast he is, because he is just a blur. But the governor is on a little bit. He's not looking to do that as much. There's no doubt.
Dave Burns, Arizona Sports, with us. Breaking down the Cardinals here on Grant and Danny. Dave, I just have this theory about sports I want to run by you and then ask you about Marvin Harrison specifically. I feel like somebody comes along and ruins it for everybody else, but in a good way. Like like C.J. Stroud last year. Now the expectations every rookie quarterback, if they're not that, they're not any good, right? Or we have to have somebody match that or exceed it in order for their season to be valuable. Watching Malik Nabers get 10 trillion targets and all of the offense basically for the Giants, and then you go, oh, Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, that's pretty good. But it's like we view it as disappointing. We shouldn't, but I wonder what the feeling is about him there so far and with all, you know, how heralded he was coming in.
I wish you could see me, because I've got this smile ear to ear, because we had this exact same conversation on our show yesterday. Right. I mean, and this was before Malik Nabers did what he did last night. This exact, like we looked at Nabers' numbers and we compared them side by side with Marvin Harrison's numbers, and not the numbers, but where they rank in the NFL. And nobody, I mean, I don't want to say nobody, just about nobody in the fan base is going, oh my God, the Cardinals took the wrong guy. Oh, this is terrible. What an embarrassment. But we are so quick to do that with the quarterback conversation, aren't we, right? Like, we're so quick to say, oh, this team screwed it up. All that team screwed it up. There's very little of that going on right now. I think the one element of consternation when it comes to Marvin Harrison Jr., he has been targeted a lot, and he's only catching about 50% of the balls that are targeted his ways. Most of that appears to be on him. There have been a couple of bad throws. That is something they're working on. I know a buddy of mine who writes for the Cardinals website pointed out that, you know, Larry Fitzgerald's target completion percentage his rookie year was like 50%. So no one's worried about it. Everybody knows it's a work in progress. I don't think there's a soul in this valley who thinks the Cardinals got the wrong guy or picked the wrong guy because of 3 or 4 games so far in the NFL. But that is funny, because like I say, in the quarterback competition or the quarterback conversation, boy, we're quick to make that judgment, aren't we?
He has 130 yards in one quarter and then 68 yards in the other 11 quarters. That's just crazy. You know, what happened at the beginning of that Rams game.
It's crazy, and it is not, I'm telling you guys, it is not from a lack of trying. They have, okay, maybe it was a lack of trying in game one against the Bills. They didn't hardly look his way, and I think he was nervous. He was running slow, and you know, nobody was.
But don't worry, he'll be wide open a bunch.
He'll get some great looks this weekend, Dave.
This is his coming out party.
Enjoy Monday, I'm telling you, it'll be free.
Bet whatever you want on FanDuel, it'll work out.
The over.
I'll be sure to pass that along to the guys. That's good. Okay, take the over. Yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr., receiving yards, take the over. Check. Okay.
Right. Secondary is as porous as a spaghetti strainer.
He'll be so comfortable. There'll be a remote control. His feet will be up, a soda.
I think I'm trying to put together a line for you. Good, like I'm trying not to be unrealistic.
Yeah, like
about
just do it for real. Don't like mess around with Dave.
Yeah, I'm not
do
trying
it really.
To be.
Do
so
it for real.
This is what I would tell your audience. 17 catches for 329 yards and 4 touchdowns.
And that's reasonable expectations,
yeah,
right?
I'm
we're keeping
being
it reasonable
crazy.
When you
I don't
say
want
that.
To
okay.
hot take it or shock jock it.
Yeah, like the new record belongs to Marvin Harrison. Like I would, that's where I would set it.
Okay, that seems like a very nuanced, balanced perspective, guys. And I appreciate you being so level-headed about it. Yeah,
that's what we're trying to do here on the Grant and Danny radio program. Shtick aside, can you buy his jersey out there yet? Is that still a thing?
No, that's still a thing. Can't do it.
I mean, are fans like overall? Are they very high on the guy, or like that would annoy me to no end if he came in here.
Oh,
and just,
he doesn't. They're high on the guy, and they're annoyed to no end about it. Yeah. They're probably more annoyed about that than they are about how many catches and how many targets and how many yards and what he hasn't done yet on the field. I'd be willing to bet they're actually more annoyed about not being able to buy the Cats jersey because they haven't from day one. I mean, we were making arguments that he's the most popular player the Cardinals have drafted since Matt Leinart. Now, you know, that didn't work out real well, but Matt Leinart was a real popular pick at the time. And that he almost instantly became one of the most popular athletes in the Valley right now. And, you know, there's a Valley with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Kyler Murray and Corbin Carroll and Diana Taurasi and a whole bunch of stars. And he just shot right up the list. Everybody loves this dude. And they hate the fact they can't buy his jersey.
Yeah, it's very weird. What about 10,000-foot view? What do you guys think this team is? I mean, is this a wild card caliber team or right now, this moment? To me, the line, I know Washington is not that good, but coming off Monday Night Football, I kind of thought it'd be closer to a pick'em type game. Like, what are the Cardinals?
I think the Cardinals are a team that in December will be playing meaningful football games to determine whether they can be a playoff team. Is that a cop-out answer? Is that good enough? I think that's what we think they are.
So it's a nice step forward year, basically.
Yeah.
No question. I mean, coming off of, you know, back-to-back seasons where, you know, the disaster with Cliff 2 years ago, last year winning 4 games when Kyler was hurt the whole time or almost the whole time. Absolutely. A step forward. In fact, I think the front office is kind of looking at it that way. Like, okay, we could have invested some resources into this year. We could have gone out and gotten a pass rusher. Maybe we could have made a play for Hassan Reddick if he was available or somebody along those lines. We didn't. We're saving it for next year because we think next year is the year where it all comes together and we're ready to compete. So I think the realistic goal is on December 1st. The Cardinals are still in it, and they're still playing meaningful football games to determine whether they're a playoff team. I think from the 10,000-foot view, that's what we're looking at.
Dave, I went to a small private high school in D.C., and we had a sister school right across the street. And I remember once being at our little local Mexican restaurant we went to all the time, and everybody at the table, boys and girls, had all dated each other at one point. And I remember thinking, like, this is a little bit awkward. This is a little bit weird. And I wonder how similar that's going to be to Cliff Kingsbury coming back to Arizona, where he still has a house. How do you guys feel about Cliff? How did you feel at the start? How did you feel in the middle? And then kind of how do you feel now?
Here's how I think we feel about Cliff. I don't think anybody really holds anything against Cliff that badly. I think, and I say that the last year Cliff was just a disaster. I mean, it was just an organization cratering, completely bottoming out, and Cliff is complicit in that. That was partially Cliff and just kind of his lack of being a CEO type. But man, there were so many things wrong with this organization internally in terms of their structure, their GM, everything, that they just kind of bottomed out then. I think that, you know, the good of Cliff was he took over a 3-win football team, and they the next year they won 5, and the next year they won 8, the next year they won 11. But starting with that playoff loss to the Rams, in which they were absolutely, completely, totally unprepared to play that football game, it was a rapid descent into pure vitriol for Cliff Kingsbury and that Cardinals team. Kyler played horribly. He got hurt the next season. Coaches were getting fired. General managers were making bad decisions. Cliff, in the middle of it, had absolutely no answers and didn't. And worst of all, Cliff just absolutely seemed to lack the ability to adapt to his environment and to adapt when things started changing in terms of how teams were preparing for him and what he was doing and flexing his game plan a little bit. And I think at the end, what confused Cardinal fans more than anything was how could ownership give Cliff Kingsbury the contract extension when they did. That was the one thing. It was like weeks after they lost to the Rams in that playoff game. And that was the thing that pissed everybody off. Just now he gets the you're going to extend his contract. Now you know you're just going to fire him in a year or two. And that's the thing. And that was more on them than it was on him, I think. That was more on ownership and management than it was on Cliff for getting that contract extension. Nobody could understand how he got it in the first place.
Burns and Gambo, Dave Burns, Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We appreciate the insight, and thank you much for taking us over to the Cardinal side of the equation here, getting us some intel.
My pleasure, guys. I'm going to pass along your gambling tips today from 2 to 6 on our show. So
you do that.
Flipper Anderson's record is in jeopardy.
And by the way, I think I've moved the line just slightly. I was being crazy earlier. I'm up to 396 yards now. 396.
396.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take the over then.
All right.
Take the over.
Indeed. Thank you, Dave.
On Grant and Danny here on The Fan. He mentioned Malik Nabers and the Marvin Harrison Jr. part of the conversation we were having. Right now, this moment, the two most likely Rookie of the Year candidates would be Daniels and Malik Nabers. And it's way too early to look at this. But Harrison has fallen way behind Nabers, and Williams has fallen way behind Daniels. Like, early on, there were the two quarterbacks, the two receivers, and the thought was maybe Williams was taken before Daniels, so he was more likely to be the guy, and Harrison was taken before Nabers. But it's actually the two LSU guys that were taken second at their position that have kind of climbed to the top here. How about some of these numbers after last night, Danny, from Malik Nabers? He was targeted 15 times for the Giants on Thursday Night Football last night. He was targeted 16 here 2 weeks ago, by the way. He has 35 catches through four games, second most ever for a rookie in his first four games behind last year when Puka Nacua caught 39, if you remember,
yeah,
in his first four games. He's got two 10-catch, 100-yard games already. Weeks 2 and Week 4, the only rookie ever who has had more than two 10-catch, 100-yard games in a season is Odell Beckham Jr., also out of LSU, also to the Giants, and that was in 2014. He did it four times. Nabers is already halfway there, not even at the quarter pole of the season. By the way, I looked this up. Terry McLaurin in his NFL career, now closing in on 90 games, I think it is, Terry has done it twice in his whole career. Nabers has done it twice in a month. Nabers is on pace for 148 catches. The record for a season is 149. He's on pace for 1,640 yards. That's only been done 20 times ever. He's on pace for 12 touchdowns. The good news for Daniels, again, it's all very early. He obviously had his massive game on primetime, which is really going to help him,
which
too.
Which helps, yeah.
But last year, remember, Puka had this crazy year nobody's ever had before. As a rookie, he went for 105 catches, 1,485 yards, and 6 touchdowns. And he still didn't win the award.
Yeah, because C.J. Stroud's cool.
C.J. Stroud had a good year.
He did.
But by the standards of, like, what is great quarterbacking, he had 4,100 yards and 23 touchdowns. Ho-hum. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
Rookies don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to belittle his season. It was miraculous, and he's already one of the great quarterbacks in the league. But Puka Nacua, take the rookie label off, had one of the great receiving seasons we've seen in a long, long time. A much more elite season at his position than, say, C.J. Stroud did. But Stroud was the number two pick. He played at Ohio State. Everybody knew him on draft night. He's a big star. The team won the division. So I guess the point is, Jaden Daniels just has to be good. And then it almost doesn't matter what Malik Nabers does. That's what we learned last year.
Yeah, so and also context matters, too. And here's what I mean by that. Houston was the laughingstock. They were the Carolina Panthers before the Carolina Panthers. That was an organization that couldn't get out of their own way. It was nothing but dramatics and disaster. And No one thinks of them that way anymore because they have C.J. Stroud. Whereas Nacua went to a pretty established group that's, you know, when healthy, 9 or 10, 11 wins, not too far removed from a couple Super Bowl appearances and a win. It's sort of seen, okay, if you're a receiver in McVay's offense, you'll get some looks. Now, he very easily has a great case, by the way. Probably should have won it in if we're putting all things equal. But the quarterback position obviously gets so much more of a premium. You look at Heisman Trophy finalists over the years. It used to be a great mix of people. Now it's, you know, the top four quarterbacks and maybe like one linebacker from somewhere because he is good on Twitter. But that's pretty much it. If you're a quarterback that helps turn around a moribund franchise with good enough numbers above the threshold, you got a great chance of winning it.
Good news for Jaden Daniels.
It's very good news.
Potentially. Next on G&D, I keep saying this is one of the best Sunday slates that we've seen. Let's get into some of the best games of the weekend and put our money where our mouth is there and actually show you why this weekend's going to be so good in the NFL. We'll go through the games next. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Week 4 football in the NFL got going last night. Cowboys survived the Giants, and we are on to Sunday. Here's your best 5 games of the slate as far as I can see, and we'll look at some of the other matchups on the other end. This was actually tough to rank, though. There's some really good games around the National Football League. I think the best game, most interesting game as far as storylines go is Minnesota-Green Bay. The Vikings are 3-0. They just throttled the Texans. Now they're playing the Packers, one of the two teams in the NFC North that was expected to finish better than Minnesota. If the Packers get Jordan Love back, I think this is actually going to be a pretty telling game. If they don't and it's Malik Willis again, well, then Minnesota may well win and they're 4-0 and you can kind of explain it away. But I still think the Vikings are starting to turn heads more than just they did early in the season when it was a cute story, to the point where people are now going, all right, Kevin O'Connell, coach of the year, Sam Darnold, one of the best stories in the early part of the season. Who knows? He keeps playing like this all year. Maybe he's looking at a franchise tag. What do you do with him? What do you do with J.J. McCarthy? And what's going to happen in this division? The flip side is the Packers have won twice without Love.
Yep.
Matt LaFleur's done an incredible job. If they're to get Love back and get a win, now you're 3-1. You're even with Minnesota. And they're in a really good spot moving forward to start hitting their stride and climb north in the north. So I think this is just a revealing game, and I'm really excited to watch
it. It's a huge game. Opened up as Packers 4.5-point favorites. That's now moved to 3, 2.5, depends on your book. This is a huge one because if Green Bay can survive this stretch with or without Jordan Love at 100%. I'm not sure if he plays this weekend or not. If he does, I don't know how close to 100% he's going to be. But for Minnesota, you know, stacking the hay right at this stage, right? They're doing things people didn't think they would do, and their schedule's really hard out of the gate, and it softens up as the season goes. But if they end up 4-0, you got to change your eyeline for them a little bit. You already do. You already have to kind of put some respect on their name in terms of what they've done defensively, certainly. We're not used to that. And Kevin O'Connell, as you said, early leader for Coach of the Year, taking everyone else's leftovers many times over in Sam Darnold and fitting him to your scheme and system and getting pretty good production, pretty amazing.
Just another of the great offensive minds who came through this Washington building. The Bills are 3-0. They travel to Baltimore up 95 to take on the Ravens. Baltimore lost their first two games and then got their season back on track with a win against the Dallas Cowboys. They are now 1-2. They've got more to play for, frankly, more on the line than the Bills do. Goes without reasoning that, you know, 1-3, you're in big, big trouble from a playoff standpoint. So that hunger makes me lean toward Baltimore, but the Bills have actually been exceptional. Josh Allen's playing the best football of any quarterback in the league. He's got 7 touchdowns, no interceptions, and they're doing it without their receivers of a year ago. It's kind of a very diversified offensive attack. He's playing point guard. He's running a little more than he did. They're running the football a little better than they have traditionally. I like the way the Bills are playing. Bills-Ravens is going to be fun.
Bills have been terrific through 3 games. 64-point differential, the best in the AFC, certainly through 3 weeks and among the best in the NFL. They have been fantastic on both sides of the football. I thought they would not be. I thought they got older, a little bit more attrition in terms of injury. Thought they were worse in terms of playmaking. And you know what? It doesn't matter when Josh Allen goes, And that's what's happened. He's the MVP through 3 weeks and change now that we've gotten week four started officially. The Ravens really put themselves in a bad spot by losing in week two, giving up a lead in the fourth quarter to the stupid Raiders. They played pretty evenly with the AFC defending and Super Bowl champs Kansas City Chiefs. We're a toenail away from being tied, going into overtime, maybe winning it with a two-point conversion. But that's a bad loss in week two. So now, because you're at such a premium where you have to harvest some of these nuts here to get yourself back into a playoff picture, they are more desperate than Buffalo, I think, to your point.
Yeah, they almost have to beat Buffalo just to make up for the Ravens game, essentially. The Seahawks and Lions have played two of the more entertaining football games in the entire league the last 2 years. Scores where both teams are in the 40s, just really great back-and-forth shootouts. And the NFL saw that and said, we're going to put them on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it's like a Big 12 game.
Seahawks at the Lions. Seattle's 3-0, but they haven't really played anybody. They beat Denver by 6 points in week one. They survived the Patriots overtime field goal win. And then they just completely bullied the Dolphins in week three, but there was no Tua, 21-point deficit for Miami in that game. So now they really get tested, and we're going to find out if Seattle is any good against the Detroit Lions. Meanwhile, Detroit is 2-1. They lost that game they won back to the Buccaneers, where they outplayed, but Goff had a clunker. I actually didn't think Jared Goff was great against the Cardinals either, so they need him to get back to playing like he did, really, frankly, over the last two whole years to try to advance to 3-1 going into their bye week post-Seattle.
Yeah, Detroit, it's been strange for them because you would take every metric possible that they put up in their week two loss against Tampa Bay, but again, they lost to Tampa Bay. 463 total yards. Everything said that they were going to win that game, then of course they didn't. And, you know, they were fine against Arizona, but again, couldn't really punch the ball in enough and had some self-sabotage and some things. They haven't played their best yet, but they're still, I think, pretty well regarded, and rightfully so, as one of the best teams in the NFC, and kind of a challenge to, you know, San Francisco, whoever happens to else be up there at the top. But these games with Seattle, you stole the words right out of my mouth, have been unbelievably entertaining over the last couple of seasons. So normally you'd go, these two teams, Seattle, Detroit, it's on my list of games of the week. I've got that one circled because that has been perfect theater the last couple of years.
It's been one of those 1 o'clock games that's available in a couple of markets, but it's a red zone fest.
Yeah.
You know, it's just Scott Hansen talks about that game.
Yeah, like 84% of the time it's on that one. And they're back in the red zone again.
So the NFL wised up and said, all right, let's show it to everybody prime time. So that's my number three game of the week. So you got Vikings, Packers 1, Bills, Ravens 2, Seahawks, Lions 3. We're going to go back to the NFC here. NFC heavy because the games in that conference are just great this weekend. Saints, Falcons is my number four game. This is going to be an important game in the NFC South. New Orleans is 2-1. They lost a game they probably shouldn't have to Philadelphia this past week. They could easily be sitting at 3-0. They've been awesome offensively going into that third game against Philly, and they crashed back down to earth. They were Washington before Washington. They were the team not punting. They scored on every single one of their drives for the first two games of the season. Think about that. That having been said, they got a tough customer perhaps in Atlanta at home. The Falcons played with, almost coulda, shoulda, woulda beat the Chiefs this past week. Wrong end of a bad call, or else maybe they would have. But the Falcons are 1-2, and they don't really have margin for error this week. The good news for Atlanta, I guess, is both of their losses have been to AFC teams. So as you go forward this year, if you're tiebreaker friendly, the season's gone about how you would design it with a 1-2 record. They beat the Eagles in the conference. They lost to the Steelers and the Chiefs. But they've got three consecutive division games coming up. New Orleans, Tampa, Carolina, with the next two at home, they really could benefit immensely from beating New Orleans and Tampa. That would get them to 3-2, 3-0 in the conference, 2-0 in the division going into a game with Carolina. But it starts with a Saints team that's probably better on paper and yet still an underdog via the sports book.
Yeah, this one's wild. So it's one of those things where when you get off to that start that the Saints did, right, the third or fourth most points in history through 2 weeks, and then you come back down to earth, and if you lose in week four, everyone's like, yeah, I knew it was a joke. I knew it was fraudulent. I knew those guys weren't that good, and this is just, you know, a weird early season hiccup. It doesn't matter. But if you win, and you look pretty good doing it, I'm not saying you got to score 45 points, so that'd be pretty sweet. But if you win this game, you're 3-1 in command. You probably should be 4-0, kind of to your point. And the only fluke then is the weird loss to Philadelphia, where two of you guys ran into each other. And now you're in charge of that weird NFC South. From Atlanta's perspective, kind of same deal, right? You need some validation. You need some a few things after that weird week one performance where Kirk Cousins didn't look his part. Next thing you know, you could be right up at the top of this, again, herky-jerky, bizarre division with Tampa having a tough opponent as well.
Speaking of Philly, the Eagles crack the list here. The Eagles and the Bucs in Tampa, game number 5. So 4 of these 5 games are NFC-only games. But Philly and Tampa has a chance to be really good. 2-1 Eagles leading the NFC East. 2-1 Tampa leading the NFC South, right? Philly coming off of an impressive win where they balled out defensively, as you've said, against the Saints. I still don't think they're that good, and they're not quite healthy, so they're right for the taking for Tampa Bay. But the Bucs were horrible last weekend.
Downright bad.
They looked great against Washington, dominated them. They looked really good against Detroit, got outplayed and stole a win. And then they got beat by 19 by the Bo Nix-led Denver Broncos, 26-7. That game, by the way, was at home, where they're home again against the Eagles. I actually like them to beat Philly. I love when teams are at home 2 straight weeks. I also hate when teams are on the road 2 straight weeks. Philly, second straight game away from home, whereas the Bucs are at Raymond James for the second time in as many Sundays. So I think the Bucs win this game against Philly and get to 3-1.
They've owned Philadelphia of late. I can't point to all the numbers, but it just that playoff drubbing from a couple seasons ago as Philadelphia was swooning down the stretch.
Last
year. But this is, an important game for Tampa because they've played worse each week. They probably didn't deserve to beat Detroit in week number 2. They did. You don't take it away from them. But their worst game of the year is their most recent game. So this, they're puffing up their chest a little bit the first couple of weeks, telling everybody, see, nobody respected us. No one believed in us. Well, you could also be 2-2 here through 4 games. For Philadelphia, again, they're probably thinking, we're getting by right now without A.J. Brown, without Devontae Smith, without Lane Johnson, without a couple other bodies. If we could somehow beat a group that's given us some fits over the years, we'll be 3-1 through a tough stretch and be feeling pretty good about ourselves.
That is a good weekend slate in the NFL. That's just the 5 best games. I mean, there's some other really entertaining.
Chargers-Chiefs, a big one.
Interesting matchups. Yeah, I think the Chiefs are going to roll. And you think that's going to be a good game?
I think there's intrigue because the Chargers basically remade themselves to try to compete with the Chiefs.
Is Justin Herbert healthy?
I don't think so.
Well, then what are we talking about?
9,000 runs and punts and a weird low-scoring game.
I mean, if Justin Herbert can play and is healthy, that I'm in on that game. But if that's the Easton Stick Taylor Heineke Fest, how much of a Chiefs whooping are they going to take? That's a 15, 18-point game maybe. Danny, let's win off the field next, pal.
Oh, together. Let's
do it.
You
got one?
Of course I do.
Good. Next, we're going to figure out what's gone right in your day to put a smile on your face. 800-636-1067. Don't do it for me. Don't do it for Danny. Don't you even think about doing it for either of us. You're doing it for Bruce Allen on G&D. And then what? Of course. It's time to figure out how you're winning off the field on Grant and Danny in lieu of our daily double play, driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. This is a mini moral victory that nobody else would care about.
I can give you an example. You're looking for an example? I can give you one. You guys want one? Here's what happened to me. I don't know how this happened or why, GP, but starting around either Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, I've been thinking about cheesesteaks. What, again, why? I have no clue. It's not like I saw some story, not some sort of subliminal marketing or something, but I was remembering fondly back in the day, called right around the turn of the millennium, 2000, 2001, the Philadelphia Cheesesteak Factory based in Georgetown, not far from the corner of Wisconsin and streets. I put probably 7,000 cheesesteaks down in the summer of 2001, paying their rent for years at a time, just going in there and ordering. I'd order a Western, I'd order a regular one. Sometimes I would get the jalapeno poppers to wash it down. Point is, I loved that place. I ate there all the time and got really, really fat. But I'm thinking about cheesesteaks a lot lately. So I put it out on the old Elon app last night. Give me some DC cheesesteak recommendations. And the people came through with flying colors. There are a couple that I'm going to try. I'm excited to do so. But I will tell you, I tried today a little place called Grazie, right there on the wharf, the Lieutenant Wharf, on my way right here to the radio station. I picked it up and I ate it and it was delicious. Therefore, I am
winning off the field.
I'm not going to give I'm not going to give any more details here than are needed, but I did not get lunch with Darius and Toby. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field?
They decided to get lunch together. I elected not to.
Oof.
I walked in and see what they'd gotten for lunch.
Oh, man.
I didn't take part in that lunch. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field?
Can they still eat it with all the shrapnel that's in there, though?
I think they can. I think Toby's already pummeled his. Darius will in no time. It's not my lunch. You guys do your own thing.
Don't yuck the yum.
Hey, you guys have fun over there. You enjoy yourselves. Let's go to Dan, who's in Fairfax on G&D. What's up, Dan?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, boys. Normally, I'm getting out a little after 4 o'clock and catching the blitz, but today, my boss looked at me and said, why don't you go home a few minutes early, and I get to participate in this the segment. So I'm, you know.
Winning off the field?
I do yes, know. Sir, you are.
You are.
We are very well up to speed on exactly what's happening for you. That's a nice little thing when the boss comes over and says, you know, you've had a good week, Peter. Head on out of here early.
Why don't you skedaddle? Have a good weekend.
Head on home and see the kids. I'll call Grant and Danny.
On my way home.
Let's go to Rich and only on G&D. Hello, Richard.
What's going on, boys? How you feeling?
Hey, Bonnie.
Doing great.
So my wife invited me out to Bethesda. Some of her big wig bosses hanging out and stuff.
From Bethesda!
Thank you, Darius. Mm-hmm. I managed to talk myself out of that, and I'm going bowling with the boys tonight. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field?
Bowling. Every time I see a bowling alley, I'm like, why don't I go bowling way more often? It's
no
fun
way.
Every time.
Really?
Bowling is so fun.
I don't think I've ever thought that.
I love bowling. I see Big Lebowski every once in a while. I drive by bowling alleys. I'm like, why don't I just go bowling?
I have not had any urge to go bowling in many, many years.
Dude, we went bowling as a show.
We did.
It was so fun.
It was a great time. It's just not something like when I go golfing, I do that. If I go play a round of golf, I go, I should play golf again soon. When I go to a movie, I go, why don't I do this every single night?
Mm-hmm.
When I go bowling, I go, that was fine.
Yeah, I went bowling. Dude, it's because it's not 7 hours like golf. It's like you go and you bowl a couple frames, you knock down some fried food, and you get out of there. You don't have to wear your own shoes.
Today, actually, I have a good one. The boss told me when I got here, he's like, hey, I owe you lunch still. I said, why do you owe me lunch? He said, a couple weeks ago, you got my lunch. We went over, I think it was like Shake Shack or something.
Okay.
I said, it's fine. Don't worry about it. He's like, no, I'll get you lunch. What do you want? And I said, what are you getting? He said, kava. I said, great.
You're like, great. I invented that.
I did invent it, and I got a kava bowl, and I didn't pay for it. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
There you go.
Let's go to Sean in Reston. Hello, Sean.
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Good, buddy.
You know, one of those days where, like, you know, your significant other just wakes up just in a bad mood, you do everything you can, try to get her happy.
No, I don't know that at all. I love you so much, sweetheart, if you're watching on YouTube. Go ahead.
Right, and then out of nowhere, you know, you get called in to go to work, and now I give her some time to cool off. I get to go make some money, so, you know, therefore I'm
winning off the field.
A little quicker on the uptake, Bruce, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
It's a slow day for Bruce, too. It's a struggle for Bruce over there. That's number one. Number two, to be clear, let me be clear. Did he just say he's winning off the field because he's leaving his angry girlfriend for a little while to go to work?
Yeah, he's leaving his irritated wife.
I think that's why Bruce was a little hesitant, because you're going to work, which means it might be a little bit of an on-field win.
No.
Wait a minute, yeah.
He's got a, he said significant other, I think. So I don't know how to phrase it.
Yeah, sorry for mislabeling. We just caused a fight that way.
Yeah, and now he'll get home. She's like, the guys on the radio said I was your fiance, but you won't pop the question, you bastard.
Yeah.
But here's the point. That guy called in and said, I live with a girl who was in such a terrible mood. She was so awful to be around that I got to go to work. To a job I don't like.
Yeah.
And just to be away from her for a couple of
hours.
Therefore, I am. Like, I mean, really, that was attaboy. That's a good one. Josh in Upper Marlboro.
Oh, hi, Josh.
Hey, so my winning off the field is the fact that you just asked about cheesesteaks. I am a certified fat kid in both name and practice. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to derail the segment, but
not
I have to speak to this very, very, very briefly. So I have vetted every cheesesteak in the Mid-Atlantic region, spending lots of time in both Philadelphia and Bucks County and the suburbs, and then certainly in my
Bucks
home
County?
Area.
When I hear Bucks County, I think of like John King on election night, like pointing at a map.
I'm And you should also think of Cooper Shark delicately milted over sliced beef, because that's a really important part of Bucks County as well. So I've vetted this every cheesesteak place in this area. Grazie Grazie is number two, so you're on to something there.
Yes.
There are only three places that have actual Cooper Shark. Every cheesesteak that's worth its salt needs to have Cooper Shark.
What so is Cooper Shark?
It's Cooper Cup Shark.
Yes, it is. It's a delightful, perfectly sharp, but not too sharp, melted cheese that goes on a good cheesesteak. Grazie Grazie is number two. Tocoa cheesesteak in College Park is by far number one. It's the best in the area, best in the region. I'm Josh from Upper Marlboro. College Park is not close to me. I drive an hour to go to Tocoa Cheesesteak in College Park. I don't work for them, but I want you to know that. So
Josh, I've heard I got Tocoa a lot. I got SoCo's or SoCo in Tacoma Park, and Al's in Alexandria was the other one I got. Can you speak to any of those?
So SoCo's and Al's are both good. They're a little non-traditional. You can get some, you know, some green and red peppers, which doesn't actually go on a real cheesesteak. You and the rolls are not quite as good. Tocoa brings their rolls in from Philly, I believe, or someplace that has delightfully soft yet, you know, chewy enough rolls. And so it's a matter of those are good cheesesteaks, but they have stuff that's not normally in a cheesesteak, like green peppers and red peppers and so forth. If you want a traditional Philly with the Cooper Sharp, with a little bit of onions, with a nice chewy roll, seeded roll, you're going to go to Tocoa.
Wow.
So remember when we had that guy on who was the president of hot dogs?
Yeah.
He was just like the master of all things hot dog. I think Josh should be that for cheesesteaks.
Dude, do you want to be the cheesesteak advocate?
What happened?
I would like to be the cheesesteak guy. This is a kind of a dream come true. I'm tearing up a little bit right now.
Yeah, you're our official show cheesesteak guy. How did you become so obsessed with cheesesteaks? Or was this just like your own thing? Or did
passion project?
Was it a job at some point?
I mean, it's something about a 42 to 44 inch waistband, and you know, a desire, and three kids that send me to food to drown my sorrows in cheese. I don't know. I just like cheesesteaks.
My guy, I get steamed up for Josh.
I love it.
He just gave us an idea. Everyone should have to announce the size of their jeans when they call in. it like puts a face with the name, you know, puts a body with a caller.
So it's our version of Patrick. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, you know, hey, this is Tim over in La Plata, 44-28. You're like, oh, short, portly guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Then someone's like a 32, 36. They're like a tall, skinny donk, you know. We got to.
Like, oh, you're a nice small forward.
When you call in, just give us your jean size. That's all we're asking for. It's not overly, we're not overbearing.
No.
We're not getting too much detail, right? Beltway Blitz is next on Grant and Danny.